Welcome to the 262nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest humid Florida. If you like to run, if you like to garden, if you like to get dirty, if you like to eat plants, you're in the right place. We talk about plant-based nutrition. We talk about endurance, athletics, running. We talk about COVID because everybody talks about COVID. And we talk about health, and we're positive. So if you like that, great. I'm glad you joined us. If you like the episode, share it with your friends. Go on over to iTunes, give us a rating so that we can be up there with the big girls and boys and get some downloads. So start out with a little endurance activity. We have the plant-based striders. So if you're interested in belonging to a social media running group or you just want to see what we're doing, you head on over to Facebook at plant-based striders, ask to join us. We're running on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays as a group. We have people that walk, run, and we're having a good time. Lots of good conversation. We talk about running, we talk about plants, and we watch the sun come up starting at about 6 a.m. here in Florida to try to beat the heat a little bit, dodge a few mosquitoes. It's all good. We meet, if you live in the area, on a street called Edgewater and Spring Lake Boat Ramp, and we take off at 6 o'clock and go out and come back, and we all start together and we end together, and there are different paces, and the more people, the merrier. It's been great. We've seen a lot of improvement in the people participating. It's fun to run with somebody else once in a while. You get a little bit motivated. You take off a little bit quicker. You forget your own pains when you're having a good conversation with people. It's just a really, really good way to spend the morning. So I enjoy it. Have to go to bed a little bit earlier to get up a little bit earlier. But, you know, it's, again, all worth it. My race is coming up. Our California International in December, we may have a swim-run event in November. Still waiting to hear on that one. But then we're signed up for the Hoka Rocky 50-miler in February, and we would like to invite you to join us at the Treasure Island Marathon. I'm sorry, it is the Treasure Coast Marathon. March 1st in Florida, so you can look that up and Google that. The signups aren't open yet, but it's a small marathon, and we're hoping to have a lot of people that we know join us, and we'll pace you and cheer you on and have groups for you, and it can be good fun. So we're hoping to get this thing rolling so we can have people that eat plant-based, people that like their health, people that like to socialize, get out and get fresh air, get together. So all exciting things. A lot of people are afraid to go out because of COVID, and, you know, there's the transmission is brought into, you know, every day there's some other new study or suggestion of or mathematical model of how this may be transferred from one person to another, or aerosols versus particulate matter, how long it hangs in the air. You know, it's all really debatable, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. But I think that one thing people agree is, you know, getting outside and getting fresh air is the best thing you possibly can do. And if you're out with your running buddies, like we're out doing our running, you know, we're in the open air, we're social distancing a little bit, you know, we're spread out, obviously, but looking ahead, but we're watching the sunrise and we're sweating to the oldies, so to speak. And, you know, I think that's a very, very healthy way to go, getting some good microbes out of the air, out of the trees. The wind is blowing. So it's all good. I do a lot of yard work in Florida, especially in the summer when we're getting rain. You can watch weeds grow very quickly. I don't use any kind of a service on my yard to take care of the bugs or add poisons to my environment. I'm very much against that. I have dogs. I'm very much cognizant of the water that runs off. We use well water, so I don't want any of those chemicals in my yard. So we pick weeds the old-fashioned way and take them out and put fresh mulch in. We've got natural mulch from a tree company to put around our mango trees and our other trees. And so we pull weeds, mow grass, take out old mulch, put new mulch in, take care of our mango trees. We have papaya trees. We have a couple avocado trees. Still a few tomato plants. They struggle this time of year. Hot peppers growing makes great addition to all our food, our all plant-based food, to put in hot peppers. A lot of times people struggle with getting rid of the salt in their diet. You know, they say something's missing, because we have great taste buds for salty foods, and especially if you've grown up in an environment that salt was one of your main seasonings, or you've eaten a lot of processed food that is preserved with salt, it can be really tough if things taste bland. So one of the good things to do is to add hot peppers to your food. If you're adding, again, fresh hot peppers, you're just having the salt that's in the vegetable itself, so it's very minimal. So you're not adding a lot of salt, but you add a lot of flavor. I do the same thing with garlic. If you want to, you know, really enhance the flavor, roasting the garlic before you put it in the dish really brings out the flavor. So before soups or starting a pizza sauce, the roasted garlic is really good. Just cut the top off of a bulb of garlic and throw it in your toaster oven for, you know, 5-6 minutes till it starts to get nice and soft, and it just comes right out of the skin without any difficulty. So add that into as flavor. Fresh ground ginger adds a lot of flavor to food as well. Of course, dicing some fresh onion on top, if you're not allergic to onions, also gives a nice flavor to things. So there's a lot of different things that you can do instead of salt that really enhances a dish. We had some pho soup yesterday that I made, and usually I put mushrooms in it, but we'd had mushrooms a couple days, 2 or 3 days in a row, and I used all my mushrooms, and I didn't realize it. So we didn't have any mushrooms in it, but we had Napa cabbage, ginger, garlic, onion, miso, collards, cilantro, lemon basil, clove, cinnamon, anise, and lemongrass. I grow lemongrass and a couple kinds of basil and cilantro and the collards out back, so that's always fun. But that made for a really, really flavorful soup. I mean, look at the antioxidants and the nutrients. And if you talk biodiversity, we know that people that eat more than 40 different vegetables and fruits a week have the most diverse gut microbiome. So if you want to count some of these up, it, you know, not counting my spices, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different foods in that one soup. Also had a little tofu in there. So a great way to get biodiversity and different microbes into your diet is by having, you know, a lot of these different vegetables in a soup. Tonight we actually had a chili with fresh tomatoes and a couple different kinds of beans over some polenta. Again, very filling, along with a salad with mixed greens and onions and tomatoes and cucumbers. So you can get a lot of different vegetables in. It's not as hard as, you know, you think the number 40 sounds like a lot, but when you start to look at the different foods that you eat. Also, we had a little corn in that, too. We had a leftover ear of corn, so I put that in there as well. So you can get a lot of different vegetables in a day. My dogs like the kale stalks and the collard stalks, so when I am de-stemming those leaves, dogs are right around my island so that they can get their nutrients as well. A lot of nutrients in the stalks. So, you know, teach your dogs to eat vegetables and use those as treats as opposed to buying these chemically, you know, laden treats that have a bunch of different things in them. You know, those greenies are full of god-awful chemicals. You think that's cleaning your dog's teeth, but carrots going to do wonderful. Kale stalks, another great thing for the dogs as well. I've been in practice in Port Charlotte since 1998, and this week I saw one of my patients that I've had in my practice since 1998, and she is now 95 years young. She has had a martini every day since I've known her. She lives in an assisted living apartment complex with her two cats. She did do swimming, and she did do an exercise program before COVID came to town. And since that time, she was sequestered onto her floor, into her room, and then it's just this week they have started to allow people to go down to a dining hall and eat with their masks, you know, wear their masks down and eat. But I saw her this week, and she's quite an amazing lady. She told me that she still meets her neighbor that she has for years every afternoon. They either go to her apartment or the neighbor's apartment, and the neighbor may bring her little dog. I don't know if she brings her cats to the neighbor's, but I don't think so. And they have their martini, and they talk about old times and what's new and things, and they have a nice visit. And it's quite amazing, you know, the positivity. You could be very depressed. She's isolated. She hasn't seen her son or daughter for quite some time. Her groceries are carried into her. Meals were brought to the room. She's seen a lot of things in her 95 years. Again, she's been extremely active, but she had a very, very positive outlook on life. She was wearing a mask, and she has oxygen, and she doesn't like, you know, carrying it around, but she's found that the oxygen helps her over time, so she's willing to use a walker now and have her portable oxygen. She takes care of her cats on her own, and it's, you know, I attribute her longevity as, like a lot of my 90-year-olds in my practice, that she has such a positive outlook on life, and she maintains her sociability, and she does some exercises in her class, and she loves people. She doesn't get down, and I think that's a big difference in the population, the over 80 population versus the younger population in this quarantine. People in their 90s, you know, I grandfathered in every 90-year-old in my practice when I went to a membership practice, so there were about 30 of them. I don't charge them anything. And, you know, I've learned more from those people than I have from many textbooks over the years. But they've seen a lot. They've experienced a lot of happiness and a lot of sadness. But if you get to be 90 years old, your outlook on life is almost always more positive than negative. And they don't seem to be too worried about this COVID thing and whether it's going to get them or not. They, if anything, don't like the isolation that they've been put under. But again, Evelyn, you know, works around it. She still has her martini with her neighbor. I don't know if that's necessarily allowed, but that's what she does, and I don't think you'll stop her. The risk of a 95-year-old every day of her life is about an 8% mortality. She doesn't think about that. She just thinks about having a good day when she gets up and doing her thing and enjoying life. And she told me that she enjoyed life. And when she could get down and do her exercise class, she enjoyed her exercise class. And I think, you know, looking at the simple things when we're kind of in a lockdown is a great outlook on life. I don't do a whole lot of special things outside my regular routine. I truly love to be outside in my backyard on the weekend doing various projects and gardening and getting dirty and getting some dirt under my nails and working up a good sweat. You know, we go limited places to Home Depot to get supplies and Publix, you know, our grocery store to get groceries. We go in and out. We're focused. And come home, and I go to work. But I enjoy the people that I interact with every day in the office. We're seeing people. We've started yoga back in our office, and we also have it on Zoom. I do the nutrition classes. We also Zoom those. And it's a great existence. With it's simple, but it's great. We cook my own food. I enjoy every meal and look forward to every meal. And I think that, and, you know, like I said, I really look forward to speaking to our 90-year-olds to, you know, hear about their lives and things that they've seen. They've seen a lot of, you know, tragedy, viruses, different things come through their life, live through losses, and again, learn that, you know, today is the most important thing and making the best of today, because you just don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And I think that's a really, really good attitude. And I was really glad to see Evelyn this week in the office. I hope you all made it through July 4th without succumbing to too many traditional July 4th foods. It's kind of vacation season. Some people are still going on vacation, but some people did get together on 4th of July. And, you know, in the office, we like to talk about, you know, being on the plant-based diet versus falling off the plant-based diet wagon. And, you know, what happens. And we try to prepare for that. We try to talk about what foods you can, you know, make for holidays that are fairly similar to what you may have done in yesteryear, but they're just some things you can't replace. And I think that, you know, I look at it, there's some things that made you sick, made me sick, or made me not as well as I am now. And those are things that I'm not going to eat anymore. Some of them I have fond memories of, but they're things that didn't serve me well. And so it was time to let go of them. Just like you let go of something in your closet that you're no longer wearing that's out of style. So I think some of these old traditional holiday foods are really out of style for anybody that's interested in their health. But it takes some preparation, and you have to be ready for, you know, what you're going to experience. And I, you know, over and over again, people that have problems when they go to somebody else's house or have problems when they're at a picnic, and it comes down to, well, I didn't like the option, so, you know, I tried to not eat things, but then I, you know, I had pie and I had chips, and then there's regret and backpedaling, and, you know, in the case of a lot of my patients, it can be excessive salt, which leads to increased volume, which increased blood pressure, could cause more chest pain. It could even cause congestive heart failure in some of my patients. So they're not without consequence. The excess of fat, like in a pie, can, you know, makes diabetes a lot worse. I always ask my nutrition class, you know, what's bad in a pie? People often say sugar is the bad thing, but the reality of it is the pie crust, you know, really carries most of the problem. It's not necessarily the flour. It doesn't help, but you put flour together with oil, butter, or Crisco, or whatever lard, whatever you make a pie crust with. There's no way you can make a pie crust without oil. That's, you know, that fat blocks the uptake of glucose into the muscle, and the glucose rises. So the apples in the pie and the flour is going to be much more poorly absorbed in the presence of in the lard or the Crisco that's in the pie crust. So you could make it better by doing a apple crumble. You know, in our cookbook, we have a couple different crumble recipes in there for dessert. So you use oats and, you know, a lot more fruit. That's a way to, you know, way to get around some of those things. But you have to be prepared, and, you know, it can really, again, lead to backpedaling. The oil can also trigger an inflammatory reaction. You know, your gut microbes see that oil, even though it could be a plant oil, it can cause a lot of inflammation to start. So people's joints can start to hurt. They can have flares of their arthritis, flares of their gout. They can, in my case, I have trouble digesting. The oil causes me to have a lot of gastroesophageal reflux. So, you know, you can feel very poor, you know, for several hours, up to several days after, you know, just not being prepared. And, you know, when you're going to one of these outings. So, you know, think about what you're going to see and bring your own things. You know, you know, if you've flown, you can, there's just no reason why you can't bring your own thing. I mean, even if you're vacationing, there's always a grocery store that you can go and pick up, you know, some dish that you can make fairly simply, even in the hotel if you had to. But you need to think about that, or ask somebody if you can bring the ingredients that you're going to the house. There's always ways around. It takes a little bit more effort. But I think that effort is really important, because when you show people that you're willing to take that extra effort to eat healthy and to eat plant-based, then that shows that, one, it's possible. You can show people that it is truly delicious. You can show people different seasonings and different spice combinations. You can show people beautiful desserts made plant-based, different fruits, different combinations. So there's it's a huge opportunity to be able to showcase how good eating plant-based is as far as the taste, as well as how good it is for you. But if you continuously, you know, just succumb to whatever's there, then basically you're saying it doesn't matter and that this is impossible. So if you happen to have an illness and you're trying to, and you tell people you're changing the way you eat because you have diabetes or you're overweight or you have high blood pressure, you have coronary artery disease, and then you can't stick to it and you're actually very sick, then there's no way that a family member that's 25 or 30 years old is going to try this because, you know, they don't have anything wrong with them and they don't think they're going to ever get anything wrong with them. And they don't associate this risk of COVID with what they eat and their gut microbiome and their diversity. So yeah, you have to make an effort to show that it really is important to you. And they don't have to join in, but you have to, you know, show people that it really is important to you. I think most people wouldn't put themselves in an environment that they felt uncomfortable if people, you know, were smoking or there was an excessive amount of drinking or violence. They stay clear of it. And so I think, you know, you have to, if that's important to you, then the nutrition should be that important to you as well, because it really is. Taking a day off could be the difference between, you know, staying home and going to the hospital. It's not really an option. You know, we say it's a process and, you know, you need to, when you're making the transition, you kind of have to give yourself a break, but it comes down to it. Once you've kind of committed to it, you've got to do the best you can for that day. So, you know, if you're still learning and somebody points out to you that you screwed up and you had something with oil in it, you know, and they're not eating that or they're plant-based and they do a little better, then great, you learn from them. But otherwise you say, I'm still learning. I had no idea that had it in, and you learn and go on. But to take the day off because it's a holiday is not going to do you any good. And again, it doesn't say anything for why you're doing what you're doing, other than it's just a convenient fad that you pick up once in a while to boast to your neighbors or your friends about. So I think you have to really think about why you're doing this. And you are being watched. You know, you're being watched by a lot of people. And, you know, when you're an outlier, and an outlier is somebody that's, you know, not a large portion of the population, which people that eat plant-based are outliers. And people are watching. They're watching to see whether or not it's doable or possible because, you know, the concept of eating plants seems to be reasonable. Most people, you know, realize that factory farming exists and killing animals is not the greatest thing in the world and we don't need to and we're destroying the planet with, you know, monocrops, and people have heard of genetically modified organisms, even if they don't know exactly what it means. So people know better. They just don't think it's doable. And if you have a disease and you show them it's not doable, then you'll never get anybody on your side. And you will never have people do the conversion. So I think, if you're going to make the commitment and the leap forward, think about that. You know, it's just part of it. You know, if you're a parent, you have to set an example for your child. You know, if you don't want your kid to swear, you don't swear in front of them. If you want your kid not to steal, you don't steal in front of them. If you want your kids to be plant-based, then you're not making them fried chicken. You want them to be healthy, you don't live unhealthy. So you have to set the example. You have to be the bigger person. So that's my take on it. Addie Delaney Meinert, our registered dietitian, she made tofu steaks and potato salad to take to her picnic. We just had a picnic here with our regular household dwellers, but my mom and Michael and I, and we had mushroom walnut burgers with a salad and fingerling potatoes and corn on the cob, and dessert was our you know, my favorite, one of my favorite desserts. It's, you know, I use a frozen banana and frozen mango and put some soy milk on that, a little cacao powder, and it makes a great frozen dessert, just right there in the container. We have been harvesting mangoes, different varieties, and all they're just this perfect this time of year. You know, if you hadn't had a Florida mango, get online and order some just to taste some really good mangoes that you can't get in the grocery store. Wonderfully sweet, different flavors, different kinds of different varieties. Really have different tastes, low fiber. Once you've tasted something like this, you know you don't want to do store mangoes anymore for the most part. So that's one of our favorite desserts, is to have frozen mango and frozen bananas. You know, before I would have had, you know, we would have made apple pies years gone by. Would have tried to make an apple, maybe a single crust apple pie. And then I went to, the apple crumble. But again, now, I'm really happy with fruit for most of my desserts. Always have watermelon this time of year. It's always been one of my favorite summer fruits. So we always have that around. My dogs love watermelon. My dogs love papaya. They like mango too, but I don't share too many of those. They're scarce enough sometimes that we save the watermelon and the papaya for them. So if you keep falling off the wagon, you know, how do you change? I think that you take where you are and you take another step and you change it. So if every time you went to a party you took X, Y, or Z, then change it to plant-based. Just, you know, this is what I'm taking. Get your go-to, get your three items that's plant-based without any oil that you really like. So if before you took baked beans, you can still take baked beans. If you took a pasta salad, you can still take a pasta salad. If you took, an apple pie, then do an apple crumble. But get three, you know, things that you take to a picnic down, so that could be your go-to. So you don't have to worry about or wonder what you're going to do. Find something that you really like, because you have to really like it in order to eat it. You have to really like what it looks like. You have to really like what it tastes like, and substitute that in. You know, if you're traveling and, you know, you would have been somebody that would grab a bag of donuts, then, you know, maybe you're going to go to a Lara bar, then maybe you're going to go to a banana bread that you make. Making something versus buying it is the transition. You know, sometimes people want to start an exercise program, but you come home and you're tired and, you know, you'll have that beer first, and then you don't want to, you eat, and you don't really want to exercise. We'll do the hard thing first, exercise first. So, you know, make it the rule. Come home, change your clothes, don't think about it, have them laid out. You know, get in your exercise clothes, do your exercise, and then, you know, you might actually change your mind and not really want that beer, not want those excessive calories that you've already worked so hard to work off. That's why I think meeting in the morning is such an important time. Not much gets in the way. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, if you have to go a little bit earlier, then it's worth it. You get your exercise done. You get it out of the road. You feel great about what you've had, you've already accomplished, and it sets the tone of the day for how you're going to carry out your day. Use the people that are watching you to your advantage. They are. You know they're watching you. So, you know, tell yourself, I can't do this because my grandkids are watching. I can't do this because my friends are watching to see if I fall off the wagon. Can't do this, or declare it. You know, some people don't declare to their friends what they're actually doing. And, you know, they don't say that I'm on my diet or I'm trying to eat differently. So declare it. This is what I'm trying to do. And, you know, your friends will hold you accountable. If anything, they'll try to derail you, perhaps, because they don't really want you to. It's not that they really don't want you to succeed, but they, you know, misery loves company. So if you're a big drinker, they're not going to want you to stop drinking and start exercising. That takes them out of the equation. If you're always going to, you know, eat overeating, they want somebody to go overeat with. So they're going to try to talk you out of it. But stick to your guns and use them as the advantage, that I have set an example that I can actually do this for them. And if you can carry it off, you know, for 3-6 weeks, you know, you're well on your way to doing it. You know, you got to, but you probably got to get 4 or 6 you know, that 4 week minimum before, you know, you really start to get safe and you really start to get things honed in of what you're going to do, what you're going to say. I'm still a firm believer that as far as this pandemic goes, that we are still in control of our health destiny. And if you have a lifestyle disease such as diabetes, coronary artery disease, you're overweight, those are the biggies, hypertension, you really need to get those under control, and they're actually reversible. If you have an autoimmune disease, then that's reversible. If you have a cancer and you're immunocompromised or you've had chemotherapy, then what can you do to make yourself and restore the biodiversity of your system that makes you resistant to infections? Because the viruses are going to be around forever. There's a virus is basically, if you think about an egg that's hollow inside and has content, a virus is basically a shell with some genetic information. It can't replicate on its own. It needs a host, such as a human. It doesn't live very long. It lives long enough to inject its DNA or its RNA into the cell. Typically, people that have high blood pressure or coronary artery disease, they have endothelial cell damage. They have some kidney issues we know that the ACE receptors seem to be a particular place where this virus likes to go and inject its genetic material. So we need to fix ourselves so that it doesn't bother us. And that's part of it. I think some interesting things that have come out, and you can take them for what they're worth, but you know, there are viruses and bacteria and yeast everywhere. There's more genetic information with those things than there are in humans. They're around all the time. When you look at the pandemics or the outbreaks that we've had over the years, they've been associated with environmental changes. They typically are occurring in heavy populated areas, populated areas where they're... You know, the water may not be good. The air may not be good. People are indoors. They're closed. There's a lot of toxins and pollutants. In the China provinces, you know, obviously the air quality was horrible. When people went on quarantine, the air quality got better. The virus, the number of infected people started to go down. You know, we could say that it's secondary. People went inside and weren't infecting each other, but maybe the virus was less virulent, or, people were less susceptible to it. Their comorbid conditions, you know, and when the air is good, and if you have coronary artery disease and you go out into toxic air, that's going to be a huge stress on your heart. If you take that stress away, then you're improving your risk of getting or having a virus cause issues. The same thing happened, you know, in MERS where it started, and in SARS. If you look at Italy, again, they have one of the highest areas where glyphosate is used. High populated area. So the atmosphere, the surrounding areas, you know, are a setup for people to be unhealthy to start with. They have a very aging elderly population. So it's just not a virus that happens. There's a setup that goes with it. You know, even in New York City, New Jersey, some of the pollutions that come across. The cyanide in the air, you know, there's all kinds of pollutants that make people with chronic disease more susceptible to things that are normally in the air and don't affect people. North Dakota's not having much of a problem. Places where there's not a lot of air pollution's not much of a problem. It seems to settle down when the air pollution starts to get better. the mechanism of disease, and you know, it seems to be worse. And again, people with coronary artery disease, vascular disease, diabetes, high inflammatory states, than even lung disease. The lungs are the last thing that seems to be going. People's tissues get leaky. They're having heart attacks, clotting. These are all things that aren't really seen, as a pathogen of a virus, more of a trifecta of bad things that are around. So again, I think it's improving your own condition. Take care of your own first, and maybe, like my 90-year-old patient, you have to be less worried about what's going on outside if you're focused on taking things inside. I think some interesting observations that I've come across. Zach Bush is a physician that I heard speak, and I looked up some of his references. But infants are born day one with a viral load. We talk about, when babies are born by C-section, they don't get the normal microbes that the vaginal flora and the normal microbes that they need for their intestines, and they tend to have more staph, and so they're basic, they're not very biodiverse. They tend to have more infections. More ear infections. They get more antibiotics. They have more allergies. So it's a tougher road to hoe than babies born vaginally. So much now that a lot of C-section babies in hospitals, they're given the vaginal flora of the mom. But we know some recent studies that even we thought that the baby's gut was actually sterile, but the reality of it is that there are pathogens, viral RNA and bacteria that are passed from the mother into the amniotic fluid from the uterus that inhabit the baby's gut early on. So a baby's born with, again, viruses and bacteria, and they have no immune system, and yet they don't get sick. And so the question is, why? If viruses are so toxic, then why aren't they making all these babies sick? And you can look at, the sanitation in place of the water is good, mom is healthy and mom is eating fine, then these babies do well. If you look at, in the past, we talk about H. pylori and being in the stomach and associated with ulcers and potentially gastric cancers. But H. pylori is a normal bacterium found in the stomach, and it's in most people. And they don't have ulcers, and they don't have reflux, and they don't have cancer. So why does it affect some people and not others? If you look at... if we take an antibiotic for a cold or a flu, then it changes our gut microbiome, and other bacteria can take over, and it can become toxic, and people get into colitis, like C. diff colitis. Why does that, because we've changed the ratio, we've changed the diversity of the bacteria. When people eat animal products, meat, dairy, eggs, the carnitine and the choline interact with the gut microbiome. And in people that are eating those things on a regular basis, they produce TMAO, which is very inflammatory. People that don't eat those have a different gut microbiome, so they don't have the inflammation and they don't get sick. So, I keep going on we blame, we used to blame bacteria. Now we're at war with viruses, and we're picking these things that we have to attack and try to eliminate, but it's impossible to eliminate these things. We have to learn to get along. And I think that should be the biggest lesson that we learn, in 2020, we all just need to be able to get along and not fight our environment so much, but make it the best that we possibly can. taking the antibiotic changes the ecosystem of our body. Having high glucose changes the microbiome, the bacteria that harbor on our skin. We get an excess of staph population. People that have diabetes tend to have a lot more infections, skin infections. You know, again, with viruses, kids don't seem to be infected as near as much with COVID. There doesn't seem to be the transmission. You know, perhaps their environment is better. Their you know, their gut microbes, you know, their whole immune system or the whole environment is much better. So, again, it's more about what can we do to improve our own being? How do we make us as a host better? It's not about trying to kill everything that's inside us or naming a few, because there's always a side effect. If you take out one bacteria, something, we don't know enough about the microbiome to take out one without having consequences. So what we call a pathogen might not actually be a pathogen, but it's just a pathogen in the face of either growing old or a different microbiome or lack of sun or a whole host of things. So, you know, perhaps the curve was flattening when the air pollution got better. Perhaps the curve flattened in a lot of places where people were, the animals, you know, animal products, there were, the meat was off the shelf and a lot of people were eating a lot less meat. Perhaps people were going to parks and getting, you know, a more diverse air to breathe instead of being in cramped gyms and malls all the time. Perhaps people were making their own food when they're home and not eating out as much and eating a little bit better, and they got better. So I think that, you know, there's so many factors to look into, as opposed to we just need to stamp out the virus. And again, if there's a vaccine, that vaccine will have side effects to it that's going to stamp out something that we're not sure that might not be, you know, maybe it's just some RNA that resets our system and it's not a pathogen to most people. Maybe it's a pathogen when we're sick and we just need to fix our underlying health conditions. So it's food for thought, so to speak. You know, I mean, I'll look at, you know, go as far as the Roundup and the pest control in the yards, that change the microbiome of your yard when you're outside, what you're exposed to. Another example, you know, we have banana trees. We have a banana tree that's planted in one spot that, you know, we've had two or three bananas plants that won't grow. We have bananas on the other side of the house that are growing just fine. It has to do with the soil and the diversity in the soil, whether it's minerals or electrolytes or even the microbes in the soil. If we want the certain plants to grow, we have to figure out how to best nurture them. And we have to figure out how to best nurture ourselves. So, you know, being choosy when you're buying your food, buying organic, you know, making sure that you get rid of the Roundup. Go in your garage right now, and if there's Roundup or toxins there, throw them away. Take them to the recycling center. It's not worth not having a few, you know, weeds in your yard to infect the whole water system and, you know, inhale this stuff that's very, very toxic. Get outside and get dirty and touch the bacteria, interact with your dogs and your cat. You get your, diversify your microbiome. I think those are all things that really help you. And of course, you know, the ones that we talk about every week, getting a normal body mass index so that your inflammatory compounds, that your body's not struggling. Getting off your medications. Every medication that you take has a side effect to it. It does certain things, but there are certain side effects. There was, you know, now with the remdesivir, we know that, you know, all these antivirals have potential liver toxicity. We know that the Zithromax can have arrhythmic potentials in people, but if you put remdesivir with these peak glycoprotein inhibitors such as digoxin or calcium channel blockers that are used for blood pressure, or even tamoxifen or vincristin, or other chemotherapeutic agents, or colchicine, which is used for gout, it can cause liver function abnormalities. So just to give these things, you know, without really thinking about it, there's always a risk benefit. There's always side effects to them. So when we throw stones at people should have been given this or people should have been given that, you have to take all these different situations in mind and what people's underlying conditions were when they were given medications and what their conditions were before they went to the hospital. It's not quite as simple as what we'd like it to be. So, you know, get off your medications if you can. And that doesn't mean stop them. That means reverse the disease that you need to get off of to make them go away. Grow something in your backyard. You know, make the air better. Make the microbiome better. Flowers, herbs, tomatoes, peppers, trees. You know, you can, even if you live in a condo, you can have some herbs, fresh herbs. There's nothing that makes your food better than to be out and go out and pick some fresh basil. And again, it's going to help your microbes. Fresh air, morning walks, evening walks, going someplace different, you know, to a different park, to a different area where you can, you know, get some diversity of the air. Looking at things, you know, even all the way down to your skincare products is really important as far as your overall health and your biodiversity and what chemicals you're putting in your body. So those are things that you can do that are much, much more important than, you know, just putting a mask on and saying, well, I make myself feel safer wearing a mask. Well, you know, it's like hiding it's like putting your head in the sand. You know, a mask is not going to save you, but eating some broccoli and kale and getting some exercise may very well save your life. And being kind to other people may very well save your life. You know, your outlook is, you know, like Evelyn's, is much, much, much more important than, you know, anything you can do as far as Lysol wipes and hiding from microbes. So my takeaway for today is, again, clean your own house first, clean your environment. And when I say clean, make it diverse and make it healthy. You know, try to see how many different vegetables you can get in a week, how many different fruits, try a new fruit, try a new vegetable, increase your exercise a little bit, and get outside and grow something, and have a great week. Stay on the plant-based wagon. Somebody's watching.